You're with Christmas Day Breakfast here on RN Summer, and I'm Jeff Wood. Great to have your company this morning. The tradition of writing songs for Christmas goes back hundreds of years and includes the long history of Christmas carols. And to bring that history alive for us this morning, we have Rex Hunt, a Uniting Church minister who's the founding director and life member of Australia's Centre for Progressive Religious Thought. He's talking with Rachel Conn about the origin and development of the Christmas carol.
Rex Hunt, Merry Christmas morning.
Thank you, and the same to you, Rachel.
Well, Christmas carols, that's what we most associate with Christmas. It's what we hear piped into the supermarket and into the department stores. But in fact, Christmas carols could go way back even to the time of St. Ambrose.
Yes, that is correct. Yes, it has a long, long history, a long development, and a lot of changes along the way.
But I think that first one that they associate with St. Ambrose wasn't a very jolly carol, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was very somber, was in Latin, and the populace as a whole really didn't identify with it.
Veni Redemptor Gentium, all about redemption.
That's correct, yes. And that was a pretty solid and life-denying period of time, really, in the sense that there was a concern for the life thereafter rather than a celebration of life in the here and now.
Well, nothing could be more opposite from the way Christmas is celebrated today, very much in the here and now.
You're not wrong about that.
How does the written record for Christmas songs and carols, as they have come to be known, hymns, how does that written record compare to the oral tradition?
The written record shows a development of some theological thinking. The oral tradition is mainly about a sense of celebration. It's out on the streets, it's in the marketplace. So there's a sense of festivity about it in the oral tradition. But there's a third tradition, and the third tradition is the tradition of the dance, because a carol was a dance song. And so there was that celebration of a group of people that would gather, there would be a leader, and then the group would form a circle dance to it. So that part has been lost. The written tradition shows the development of theological thinking, but the oral tradition is clearly there that it was a sense of festivity and it was a sense of life-affirming here and now.
So we're really talking about songs of the people, almost a folk tradition.
A folk tradition, a folk religion.
A folk religion. Well, I think of the wonderful song that I always thought was one of the loveliest, the Anglo-Norman Wassail song.
Yes.
Which became the Christmas carol, Here We Come A-Wassailing Among the Leaves So Green. I never understood why it said the leaves so green, but what's interesting is that the verses say, we're not beggars, we are your neighbor's children. And they're obviously coming around, perhaps expecting some good cheer, some gifts of, you know, sweetmeats or whatever. A beautiful example of a rather secular celebration.
Yes, and some would say that Charles Dickens really had that in mind when he wrote A Christmas Carol. Was the wassail tradition and that movement of people from house to house. And that was reflected in his story called The Christmas Carol. Certainly there are those that would want to claim that he really didn't know about the dance side of things, but he certainly knew about the wassail.
Here we come a-wassailing among the leaves of green. Here we come a-wandering so fair to be seen. Love and joy come to you, and to you you wassail too. And God bless you and send in a happy new year. And God send you a happy new year. We are not daily beggars that beg from door to door. We are neighbours' children that you have seen before. Love and joy come to you, and to you, your wassail too. And God bless you and send you a happy new year. And God send you a happy new year.
Well, speaking of Charles Dickens, it seems that by the mid-1850s, we have a kind of burgeoning of Christmas carols that find their way from perhaps the market square back into the church. Now, is this the time when some of the most well-known Christmas carols of today come from?
Yes, it is. That whole period of time saw a real blossoming of Christmas itself, not just in the carols, but Christmas itself. We see the development of the Christmas card. We see the expansion of the Christmas letter. We see some of the poems that we identify with Christmas. But yes, we certainly see the expansion of so-called Christmas hymns, things like Hark the Herald Angels Sing, these sorts of songs which we identify with Christmas, sometimes that appear on our carols by candlelight programs, sometimes sung in churches. But that sort of tradition is a clear development around that particular period of time, between the 40s to 80s, the 1840s to 1880s.
Well, certainly, joy to the world, the Lord has come. Clearly, religious themes are coming back in much more. Hark the herald angels sing, and it came upon a midnight clear.
Yes, all of those that people still sing today come out of that era.
Well, with these carols, whether they're sung in a church or perhaps in the family setting, it seems to me that's probably the best way of arousing a collective sentiment for the season.
The singing of carols, be it in a family or other situation, is a very non-threatening one. They're joyous occasions. You don't have to have a theological degree. You don't have to argue doctrine. There's that sense of celebration, sense of life about it, and sense of mystique associated with it as well. And it really doesn't matter in a group type situation like that, be it family or larger. I mean, if you make a mistake, who's going to worry about that? You pick it up with the next line and away you go. So it's that sense of group or corporateness within a family, a unit, or certainly in a wider application outdoors.
And of course, so many families had a piano in the house or some kind of instrument, so people would often gather around and sing.
It was a feature of a family life. I'm not sure that it is as strong today as it was in the past. Not everyone now has a piano. They pull out a DVD or a CD or an iPod and play their music on it. But the attraction and the alertness which singing and songs is a great reminder that, hey, there's something has changed from the normal and we're moving into a festival. And that's the importance of the carol now.
Well, you know, back in the 1860s, children were becoming more and more important in that festival. And I think of the children's carols that were written for them, like Jingle Bells. Hard to believe that was actually back in the late 1850s.
Jingle Bells is a classic, isn't it? Although they tell me that it really doesn't have much to do with Christmas, but you tell that to any child in a playgroup now or anywhere else. It is a great joyous occasion, and I think that's the side of Christmas which is important to families.
And so different from the mood created by Silent Night, a carol you might sing before you go to sleep at night.
It is a different mood, isn't it? And it's a carol with its own history, of course. It comes out of Germany. It gained its reputation at the beginning of the First World War. It's a mixture of, if you like, history and myth. I suppose the greatest story about it is that how it stopped the war for one day, an initiative of the Germans. There was no man's land, if you like, between the two trenches. Suddenly a voice comes out singing in German, Silent Night, and other people joined in. Now, the history of that is debated, but certainly the legend is there, and I think there's a reasonable amount of history to base it on, but a very important carol that has influenced a lot of people on the way in which we lead into the Christmas Day event, but Silent Night beforehand.
Yes, and indeed that's been made into a very moving film, hasn't it?
It is, yes.
Well, from that hugely dramatic story to something lighter, and that is the incredibly popular Christmas song, White Christmas, which, of course, Hollywood gave us.
Yes, it was the beginning of the way in which Hollywood helped to determine Christmas in lots of ways. 1942, Holiday Inn, White Christmas.
Right in the middle of the war. And the words of White Christmas would tug at the heartstrings of most people because of its nostalgia, the memory of Christmas's past.
Yes, and it was a great hit with the American forces. Again, as you say, that longing to be, why am I here in this hellhole? I wish I was back home. And so it became extremely popular with the forces.
And that sense of what's happening as more than just a religious holiday, but it encapsulates a whole season, the season of snow, all of that. But of course, that would jar very seriously with Australians, wouldn't it?
I was going to say that whatever you say, yes, that's the Northern Hemisphere. Christmas. Although I'm surprised that the number of people in Australia, that they will still hang on to the, if you like, the cold celebration of Christmas amidst the very hot season that we have. So nostalgia and traditions linger there, even if they're in strong juxtaposition to what's happening. But it stands in vast contrast. Although when I say vast, gee, it was in the 1960s, you know, it did snow in Hobart on Christmas Day.
You would say that, having lived down there for a while. Well, you can hang out for the snow flurries if they come in the next decade. But in the meantime, Australians have written some rather lovely Australian carols that evoke the particular characteristics of this land.
Yes, 1948 was a good year for the writing of Australian or Southern Hemisphere songs. And one of the most famous, of course, is the Christmas Day or the North Wind. And there's lots of others that came out of that relationship, I think published through Castle's music.
Carol of the Birds is a rather wonderful one, isn't it?
It is. It's a wonderful one. I can remember the first time that we sang Arana, Arana in St Andrews in Colac in Victoria.
That's an Aboriginal word.
Yes. Yes, it is. It means welcome and celebration, those sorts of things. And it was tremendous to actually have 300-odd people singing that in a church on Christmas Day. And I'm not sure that it had been sung in that church before then, and that's 1983-84.
Well, I recently met a New Zealand composer, Shirley Murray. She's written a lot of contemporary hymns. Her composition, Carol Our Christmas.
An upside-down Christmas.
Indeed. It's a wonderful example of really taking the bull by the horns, as it were, and saying it like it is.
Exactly. In fact, in my liturgies on this day, the last verse will be sung through Advent, if you like. You sing the first verse, the second verse, the third verse, the fourth verse. And so it all comes together then on Christmas Day, that particular carol, a great celebration of a southern hemisphere, upside down Christmas to what the traditional image of a northern hemisphere Christmas is all about.
Yeah, she says, snow not falling, trees not bare.
Great images, though, aren't they?
They are great images.
Because they're real to us and our experience. And if our Christmas or our theology doesn't mesh with our experience, then it remains outside us and is not as meaningful.
More contemporary carols, more religious in some ways? I mean, is religious imagery finding its way back in?
The image of the sacred, yes, is finding its way back in. If you like, those who hold that the sacred is the old man in the sky or the transcendence or whatever word we want to use out there really has died. But the resurgence of the sacred is that which is now around us. And so we can see it in relationships, within our family, within our nature. So the sense of sacred is now more horizontal rather than, if you like, vertical. And that is what is being picked up and expressed in the songs of Shirley Aaron and Murray. And they're the ones that I really love.
Carol Our Christmas, an upside-down Christmas by the contemporary New Zealand hymn writer Shirley Aaron Murray, sung there by the Wellington Youth Choir, and introduced for us by Rex A. E. Hunt, not to be confused with his fish-kissing namesake, a Uniting Church minister based on the central coast of New South Wales, and he was speaking with Rachel Conn.